Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America Roundtable. My name's Turner Sparks.
I'm Sir Michael Ira Kaplan.
Oh, yeah, on the podcast today.
You gotta be smarter
today. Andrew Heaton from the Political Orphanage. We have Dr. Andrea Jones Roy from the Majoring in Everything podcast. And of course, the two of us, the world's four smartest podcasting brains coming together.
Assembling the brains.
Assembling the brains to talk about all the issues in the world that matter. And that will be happening in just a minute, Kaplan. But we're going to keep announcing this. I don't know if we've said this yet on this show, so we're going to say it right now.
Say it again.
February 11th. 2022. We're doing a 2023.
2023.
Excuse me.
The year of the duck. Get it right.
I'm still writing duck on my checks. We're doing. We're screening our television pilot. We went to El Salvador. Lost in America podcast went to El Salvador. We filmed the TV episode Lost in El Salvador, where we learned all about Bitcoin, what it's like to live in a country where Bitcoin is your currency. Gabby Rivera's on the show. Andrea McLeod, Christian Magu, and many others. And then we do a stand-up comedy show with all these comedians at the end of the week in El Salvador. That we've turned that into a TV show. We will be screening it on February 11th in Brooklyn, New York, exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. So the word's already gone out to our current Patreon subscribers for $5. Yeah. That's all it takes to get invited to this thing. Go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. Throw in $5 and boom, we will send you an invite. It's a private theater. We can't tell you specifically where it is, except for that it's in downtown Brooklyn.
We will send you a passcode. No, we'll send you the information. You got to be a Patreon to get that information. So
not only will we send you the information, we're providing drinks.
You're going to make money on this deal.
There's going to be a little schmoozing before and after. This
is our thank you
to all of our Patreon subscribers. Yeah, we already have. I think this thing's already halfway full, and we just sent it out less than 24 hours ago. So yeah. The theater's half full. You got to get in now. And if you're not in the New York City area, guess what? Good news. On February 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and all times in between and around, we are doing a screening online. There'll be a private video link. I assume we'll do a YouTube link or something like that. And we will have guests from the show, stars of the episode, and also maybe a director and a behind-the-scenes people coming on. We will do a screening for all of our Patreon subscribers who cannot make it to New York City. And then afterwards, we'll do a little chat with everybody, a question and answer. We're doing two of those. One is February 16th, 9 p.m. Eastern. The second one is March 2nd, 9 p.m. Eastern. Again, the only way to get invited to that, to get that private link, is by going to patreon.com/lostinamerica. Kaplan, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's the best deal now on the planet Earth, because not only do you get, for $5 a month, you get all of the episodes of Live from the Bunker, 300 episodes at this point. You get to see this show exclusive before it hits the festival circuit, before it's on the TV, before it's anywhere. You'll be able to tell people you saw it first.
And thanks for bringing that up, questions. Kaplan. Yeah. We do have festivals interested in airing our show. We won't say which ones. Festivals around the United States of America. We have TV networks interested in the show. There's a lot going on, streaming platforms. So you're going to get to see it first before anyone sees it. Before your mother will not have even seen it by that point.
and you'll see the original before, you know, maybe the network takes a line out or something here or there. You'll see our vision at the beginning. So this will be a special moment. If you've been a fan of this podcast for a long time, this is the time to come on out. Join the club.
It is true. This is the best time, and it's the best time to support, because we should say this, self-funded this episode. Listen, no, here's the cold, hard truth of Hollywood. Nobody is giving me and Kaplan a TV show just based off of an idea. We're not walking into NBC studios and
we're
saying,
not Nepo babies.
Yeah. We're not. What's that guy, Brian Williams, the guy who faked that he was in Afghanistan or something? What did he do?
You're not
crashed
Brian
a helicopter?
Williams, yeah.
His daughter, she gets to be on every TV show on the planet because her dad faked his death on NBC. That's not us. Jane Kaplan didn't fake her death on NBC. Gary Sparks did not fake his death on NBC. So we don't get anything. So no one's giving us a show based off of an idea, based off our lineage, based off our heritage. No, we need to go out and work for it. So we self-funded this episode. Do you know who's done this? Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's the model. No one would give those
guys.
The best
show on TV before us.
None of those guys were famous. None of them had Twitter followers, Instagram, none of that. So they said, let's create the exact show we want, take that episode around, that pilot episode, and try and sell it. That's exactly what we're doing. We had the vision. We said, this is a good idea. We know all these comedians in every country around the world. Nobody else does. We also have the confidence to know we can put on a great stand-up comedy show in any country in the world. I'll write stand-up when I get there. I didn't even write till we started getting there. Kaplan and I sat in a room, threw around ideas. I set them on stage. You're going to see them on the show. Plus, we follow the news. We're tracking the news worldwide. There's no other comedian doing that either. We're the only people who could successfully pull this show off. So we said, why don't we just do it? We'll do the entire episode. We'll cut it. We'll put it all together with Kings County Productions over there.
Kings County Productions, yeah.
And then we'll shop it around. So now we're at the shopping around stage, and we want you all to see it first. It's pretty exciting.
So you're exciting. I've always wanted to be Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny, so now I have something in common with him. So this is it's going to be great.
I now want to own a Welsh soccer team. That's my next step.
You want to be...
The other guy, whatever his name is.
I was going to say Frank, but he wasn't on the pilot episode, so Danny DeVito's character. But yeah, Rob McElroy.
Rob McElhaney, that's me. That's what
McElhaney, I want. McElhaney, big Philly fan, so I want to be him too, but yeah.
That's my next step. All right, let's get to the episode, Kaplan. I am currently coming to you, by the way, from Sydney, Australia. Kaplan's in Long Island City, New York. I'm on tour, everybody. Go to turnersparks.com to see all my tour dates. You can check me out. I'm in the next 2 weeks. I'm in Sydney. After that, I go to Carson City, Nevada, which is near Reno. And then I go to Las Vegas for a week on the Las Vegas Strip at the Tropicana. I'll be there. I'm all over the place. So go to turnersparks.com or follow me on Instagram at turnersparks. Follow Kaplan at Cap'n America. Cap'n NYC if you're trying to buy homes.
If you're all your real estate needs here, especially in New York City area, but anywhere, I can help you anywhere. I'll give you advice. So hook me up, Cap'n NYC.
Also, Cap, we have big news. Didn't you say we went to number one in a certain country last week?
We went to, last week's episode. It was great. We took a few weeks off. We came back focused better than ever. Our episode on Brazil went to number one in Brazil on the stand-up comedy charts. So that's a new country to add to the shirts if we ever bring them back. Print the shirts.
Number one in Brazil. I'm at least adding it to my resume.
That's one of our better ones, I feel like, to put on the...
That's a legit Brazil. Country, not the other.
It's known
countries.
As the Armenia of South America by many. So
it is. Yeah, they also hate Azerbaijan.
So if a country storms their capital, we will do an episode and we will go to number one. So we root for stormings of capitals.
That's our guarantee to you.
That's our guarantee to you, people.
Storm your capital, and we'll do a pod on you, and you'll go to we'll go to number one. So that's the payoff. All right.
So
that's
this episode, we should just say in this episode, you were putting the finishing touches in the editing suites on the TV show when we recorded this. So you're not in the beginning of this episode. It's just me trying to get a word in edgewise with the brains. And then you join us halfway through.
So the first half, maybe the first 30 minutes or so, is you trying to speak while Andrew Heaton talks for 30 minutes. So if anybody wants, feel free to skip ahead a half an hour. When I
get
come
a few good
in,
lines in. Yeah.
I come in a half an hour in, and maybe it balances out a little at that point. Yeah. I come off the bench.
And I'll say my last point is we recorded this last week, so we're going to talk about George Santos. We're not going to bring up the whole drag queen storyline. So if you're wondering why we don't go there, it's not because we're super mature or anything like that. We just that news hadn't broken yet. Who knows what else will break by the time this is released? But yeah, enjoy. It's a great episode.
All right, enjoy the episode.
It has been a few months since we have assembled the world's smartest podcast network, and we are doing so today, albeit in a slightly different form than usual. I am Andrew Heaton, host of The Political Orphanage, and I am likewise joined by Andrea Jones-Roy. They are the host of Majoring in Everything, and our other two fearless co-hosts are partially involved in this episode. Turner Sparks, comedian extraordinaire, is hard at work at this very moment submitting a really fun idea to some film festivals. He may be joining us later in the episode, but he's doing specific comedian stuff. We are joined by Mike Kaplan, but it's my understanding that Mike Kaplan is stricken with plague and has fought his way to the computer to join us, but he's kind of like that leprous king figure in Braveheart. So Andrea and I are probably going to carry the majority of it, whereas Kaplan will just kind of decompose in the background, but occasionally launch in to save us. Is that about right, Kaplan?
That's about sums it up. I've got Gatorade. It's got electrolytes. I'm drinking it as we do this. So I think it's going to – I'm going to get stronger as the episode goes. I think Gatorade's going to be the key.
Okay.
Turner is, as you said, he's editing. He's watching our last cut before we submit a project we worked very hard on, independent project, mm-hmm. to some film festivals. Can I mention an offer for people who might want to see it?
I think you can.
Yeah. If you go to for Lost in America, that's where we host the Lost in America podcast. And if you go to patreon.com/Lost in America, can become one of our Patreons for $5 a month. And we do a show every week. We do episodes, bonus episodes, but who cares about all that? You get to see this project we did. We went to El Salvador. We profiled three different comedians. We interviewed all sorts of government officials, basically the majority whip of their government we interviewed, all on the subject of what it's like to make Bitcoin legal tender, because they are the only country in the world at the moment who's adopted Bitcoin as their currency, legal currency. So we did an episode on that. And if you want to watch it online, if you become one of our Patreon members, even for just 1 month, patreon.com/lostinamerica, you can, we're going to have two different screenings next month for you. So
Kaplan, it sounds like for listeners of my show, The Political Orphanage, two dear comedians within the family did a travel show involving Bitcoin, which I think would be up the alley of a significant amount of people that listen to my show.
Yes, I think that your audience would definitely enjoy this. We interview there's a guy named Max Kaiser we interview, who I think your audience will have a lot of fun watching, and he's the high priest of Bitcoin. He's an American guy who lives down there, so it's a lot of fun. It came out really well. At the end of the episode, we put on a stand-up comedy show, mm-hmm. with all the comedians you see in the episode as well, and Turner performs. So
nice.
We're really proud of it. It's great.
I will check that out. It sounds great.
Yeah, I keep wanting to just ask, like, so what's happening with Bitcoin in El Salvador? But I feel like maybe I should become a Patreon.
Spoiler.
to find out.
Gotta watch.
Freeloading, yeah. Andrea.
Yeah, God, just cough up the $5. I guess I'll do it. But Cap, I'm picturing you as like a glitching hologram that will come in and out. Though you've already gained strength, even just talking about the Bitcoin shaman.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah. So I'll be okay. I know how to rally when the mics are on. So
I am in fine health, because not only have I been doing a push-up per week and sleeping an adequate amount, eating celery, and all the other things you need to do, I'm very excited to talk about today's topics. In fact, gleeful. These are two topics that are kind of like, what's that term in basketball when you like slam it down through the hoop and everybody's like, yeah, he really did that.
Slam dunk? A
slam dunk. These are slam dunk topics. So we're going to be making fun of university snowflakeism. I don't know what term to use here, or Orwellian right speak, but executed in a really stupidly frivolous manner that I am just giddy to discuss. And lest we appear to be one-sided in our attacks today, we are also going to be talking about the increasingly infamous and increasingly hilarious Representative George Santos, who is the Confederate lying P.T. Barnum of Long Island that is now sitting within the United States House of Representatives. We're going to do some of his greatest hits and talk about what to do with them. So the first story that we're going to talk about is that – the IT department or some subset of IT at the University of Stanford put out a extensive, hilarious list of words which they determined are offensive and not to be used anymore. So to be very specific about this, there's a couple of like subcommittees within the IT department that represent people of color in IT or something to that effect. And they compiled this particular document called, let's see if I can find that, called Stanford University Elimination of Harmful Language Initiative. And that came out in December. That's when I became aware of it. There is a we'll talk about it in great detail. There is an update on this that we can do once we've exhausted ourselves. But in effect, this is an initiative at Stanford to eliminate quote unquote harmful language. And I literally thought that Governor DeSantis snuck into Stanford and wrote this to recruit Republicans, because by the end of it, I was like, for the record, the second I set foot on Stanford campus, I will be a Republican while on the campus. I'm not anywhere else in the world, but from now on, if ever I am at Stanford, because it was so over the top. Do you recall any of the words, Andrea, that stood out to you?
I recall many of them, and I want to say that I also think I became a Republican, and your listeners know that I'm to the left, and mm-hmm. I'm not anymore, I guess, if this is what the left looks like. I've never been more sympathetic to everyone to the right of me when I read this list. So the two that stand out to me were, of course, the whole conversation about can we call ourselves Americans because there are other countries in the Americas, and we need to think about that. So there's that one, which I think we can talk about at length. But the one that really stood out to me,
by the way, Lost in America. So,
yeah, you're lost in the United States.
Or you really have to expand the remit of your show.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, if you're going to El Salvador, I guess it counts. But
there you go.
The one that really stood out to me in very much a Streisand effect sort of way, in that now that I didn't even know it was a phrase, and now I can't stop thinking it, and I'm going to use it all the time, is circle the wagons. Do you remember this from the list?
Yeah, of course. I'm
I've
from
never
Oklahoma.
Said circle. Oh, of course. All right. So, well, I am not from Oklahoma, and so I have never said circle the wagons in my life. I know what it means. It means like gather around and work on something, I think.
So why is it a problem, circle the wagons? I don't even know.
Well, it's a problem because it's apparently a Native American term. And is it, though? I don't know. Are people saying this?
So, are wagons offended?
Yeah, I read through the whole of this document, and I was gleeful because it's so stupid that I enjoyed it. But I read the whole document this morning.
Yeah.
And the ethos of the Stanford Elimination of Harmful Language Initiative is, from what I can tell, eliminate any word that has ever offended anyone in any context, regardless of use, context, intent, or origin, or any word that could potentially offend anyone, regardless of use, intent, context, or origin. So it's all on the receiving end of this. Theoretically, if you can picture a person that ought to be offended by this thing, get rid of it. Right. And so there's lots of words like that. There are some words we can talk about that I'm like, yeah, I'm on board with not using that word anymore. There's about—
Should we say them all first?
Eight. Yeah. Well, and I'll add to this that for listeners that are maybe new to my show or unfamiliar with Andrea or whoever, Andrea and I and Ron Hayden did a whole program about 6 months ago on when and how to update language that I feel would dovetail with this. And I'll put it in the episode show notes. I am not offended by circle the wagons. I could kind of understand why somebody would do it, but here's part of the problem too. If you take a word that is on the edge where you're like, it doesn't strike me as offensive, but explain your reasoning to me, but you add a bunch of really stupid words to it, then I go, you're a moron. It. I'm not going to do any of this. So like some of the other words that accompany that circle the wagons one, Circle the wagons, the origin of that is that when settlers were moving west and they were attacked by Indian raiding parties, they would put the— – and by the way, I'm from Oklahoma and all of my Native American friends say Indian, which is why I use that word, just like the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Look at you.
Even as I said Native American, I was like, is that what I ought to be saying? Should I check the list?
Yeah. Indigenous. Is that allowed in Native American?
They would— – the settlers would circle the wagon to create a easily defensible unit against raids. That's it. Mm. And the idea is, well, because the white guys were the bad guys, and it implies that the Native Americans were savages, therefore it is offensive.
Well, see, I already got it wrong because I said that it was a Native American term, which doesn't make any sense because it was the white people who had the wagons.
It was
so.
Just it's, so it's
here's,
offensive.
Here's how
because,
little I know.
Right, it's just offensive because it was used by the white people, and they were the bad guys in this story. Is that that's the reason? I'm like confused.
I think that's right. That one didn't stand out to me. Like the one at the top of my list of one of the words that Stanford's IT department decided was offensive was the word brave.
Oh,
I don't know, somebody says brave was. Last year, she's so brave, you know, but brave, according to the guide, is harmful for perpetuating the stereotype of the noble, courageous savage. So brave could mean Indian brave, therefore don't use it.
Even as an adjective, or is it just as a noun we can't use it?
My suspicion is, could anyone be offended by it?
Yeah.
Yes. There's zero surgical strategic element in this document. It's just whatever it is. In some of the instances, they do make a distinction between noun and verb. For example, the word grandfather. Grandfather is also a harmful word according to this document. However, they do specify as a verb. So if you say we're going to grandfather him in. Because it could allude to grandfather clause in southern states denying voting rights. Some of the other big ones, the word seminal, we shouldn't use anymore because the root origin is semen. Therefore, it implies male dominance. So seminal can't be used anymore.
I didn't even know that was the root of seminal.
Yeah,
it really does feel like this is some kind of joke, honestly.
It does. I read this.
I hope we're being pranked.
Did the Babylon Bee hack into Stanford's IT department?
And why is it coming from IT? The whole thing come from,
because
I don't
these
know,
colleges have they
cultural
all get
studies
paid.
Or something.
Right. Like the Office of Multicultural Advancement or Diversity, one of those. It's not from one of those departments.
Right. Yeah.
So weird. Brave that you. Sorry, I thought you were saying it was like maybe cowards were offended or something. Like I don't even know. Like I feel like each one of these, I wouldn't be able to get why I'd be offended. Like none of them. Seminole.
How about this? I'm going to give you some of them, and you can tell me why you think it's offensive. This could be a fun game that we're going to do.
I like it. All right.
Okay, Andrea, your word is cakewalk. Why, according to Stanford, is the word cakewalk offensive?
Oh, I even read the whole document and I can't remember
why
it's
offensive.
Okay, why do you think it is, Cap?
Because walking is, the idea of walking is offensive to people who don't have legs, right? Atheist, is that the word?
Interesting. Okay, Andrea?
Oh, I was going to go more down the, some kind of derogatory, this is just going to reveal Cap and Mai's own biases, like where we think it might be prevalent. I think it's something that's like making fun of how people walk in the LGBTQ+ community.
Interesting. Oh. Okay.
That's the final answer.
The answer, according to Stanford, is, enslaved people covertly used exaggerated dance to mock their enslavers. This turned into balls where the white enslavers would hold for entertainment a ball, and the prize was a cake. So I don't even fully – I'm reading
who
that.
Who knows this?
I copied and pasted that, and I don't know what it means. I don't fully – by the way, you can't use the word slave.
Right.
And that's partly because this is
– slave.
So this is an IT department. Right. Well, so two things. At first, I was like, okay, I kind of – like I'm trying to give the slightest benefit of the doubt here. It is IT.
Right.
When you come to computer parts, like a hard drive can be slaved to a master. That's a term that's been around for a while, right? And they're like, well, that could – you know, that could be offensive. Okay. But the term slave labor is also not okay. Like when you're actually talking about slavery, you can't say slave labor. And I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but you're supposed to say, instead of slave labor, unfair work practices. So
even know that.
My Jewish holiday Passover has just been canceled. I got to go through the whole Haggadah and change all that.
If we're talking about the antebellum South, you wouldn't say the South relied on slave labor. You would say it relied on unfair work practices because the word
slavery
is offensive.
Totally.
What did you say, Cameron?
That doesn't. doesn't that diminish slavery, though? Like, if I was teaching someone who never heard of slavery and I said unfair work practice, is it just picturing like, oh, they don't give me a, they didn't give them lunch breaks or something, or they didn't live in sick days.
It's,
like
it's literally, it's saying
yeah, no overtime.
The concept is offensive. We can't talk about the concept is offensive, so we're going to rename it. It's like, right, but the word's different than the – like, slavery is offensive as an institution. Right. I agree. Slavery is awful. But
right, but it's happened.
Altering the label does nothing to change the institution, it particularly when we're talking retrospectively about, like, Mike Kaplan's ancestors building the pyramids or something. Like, it's beyond weird to me.
If anything, that's even further than I realized, because I had heard the version where you say – maybe it's a halfway step towards this – where you say people who were enslaved as opposed to slaves as the identity. And you're supposed to say that with homeless people, people who are unhoused or something like that.
Right. You know what?
This version is even worse, because you're right. You're not even acknowledging the term. And this is where, and I think we've talked about this before, you know, the left and right kind of come full circle. And it's like on the right, when you talk about the Civil War, I'm oversimplifying, it's, you know, states' rights and slaves didn't have it that bad and blah, blah, blah. And now on the left, you're like, yeah, well, you can't talk about slaves. So it's like, oh, we agree. Right. You know, and we can't talk about the Holocaust because it's too harmful to talk about. Like, that's right. Exactly the Holocaust denying crap that people on the left are supposed to be against.
Very much so. And to Cap's earlier point about like combining the two, unfair labor practices is like, I'm supposed to have vacation, but I can't have it. Or, you know, I should be paid a minimum of $30,000. They only give it. That's not the same thing as slavery. I'm not saying it's good, but to say one is the other demeans the first. If you're saying that unfair labor practice, like slavery is just a subset of unfair labor practices, I'm like, well, that kind of elevates slavery to not as bad as I thought it previously was, because I wouldn't put that in the same category as he didn't get sufficient paternity leave or something like that. Like, these are different.
Yeah. Along those lines, not even as severe, because I think, you know, slavery is such a wound that we've all been a part of and lingers on today. But I think a version of this is during the height of Me Too, we started calling everything sexual misconduct. And it was like, Bill Cosby was sexual misconduct, and Aziz Ansari making out grossly with a woman was sexual misconduct. And you're like, this.
Right, it was the same exact thing. Harvey Weinstein and some guy who like hit on someone who worked for him a little bit inappropriately or something.
Who
like
said, that. Yeah.
Guy who made a joke and serial rapist are all in the same category.
Exactly. The same thing.
And it's we're not, you know, and I even had some conversations with people. I wrote a little article about it at the time, but I had some conversations with some lawyers about this where they said, well, you know, it all is sexual misconduct in the eyes of the law. And some people that I spoke with argued that you can't actually rank the severity, because it could be that someone gets raped and it's not that bad for them. It's bad, but it's not like derailing of their whole lives. Whereas someone's, you know, I'm making a guess here, but like a woman's comedy career is entirely derailed because Louis C.K. jerked off in front of them. And it's like, while rape is worse than having someone jerk off in front of you, this is such a fun conversation, maybe it affected the people differently. And so the defense for using the same language was that you wanted to be mindful of the fact that, like, yes, harshness matters, but there's also like how the recipient experiences it. And I was
That's such a weird legal way of looking at things. That would change all of law. Like every crime, if it's based
on they murdered that person, but it was kind of a bad person. So
that person actually kind of was suicidal anyway. So let's not count it as murder. They were going to kill
him. Honestly, you did him a favor. Anyway, it's all very gross, and it does whitewash. And I use that word deliberately, and I probably shouldn't.
You would absolutely not be allowed to use that word. It is literally on the list, Andrea. It's on the list.
On the list. I honestly think we should do an episode.
As is the term white paper, because it implies that papers can be ranked according to whiteness or other colors.
Do we have black papers?
No, but there is black bald. Black bald is no longer appropriate.
Well, I did a project with a major fintech company a few years ago, right in the summer 2020, when everyone was freaking out about DEI. So they hired me, a white person, to come in and help a company figure out what to do. And I did a bunch of long interviews and surveys with black employees and other non-white employees. And many of they were like, what does this company need to do to resolve the racial inequities at this organization? And many people said, you all are freaking out about this like master and slave language, because it was a tech company. So there's a lot of like computer engineering going on. You're freaking out about this master and slave language. And there's another set of words called whitelisting and blacklisting, where you whitelist or blacklist a certain set of emails that can get through your security screenings or whatever. And they're like, we don't care about any of that. Stop it. Just don't be like mean to us at the workplace and like treat me, you know, with the same amount of respect and assume competence just like you would if it was a white person. They're like, we don't give a shit about blackballing and blacklisting and masters. Like, stop it.
This makes total sense to me and also corroborates with all of the black people I'm friends with.
Yeah.
This is one of the other things that in reading this document was, again, there are words that are offensive that we should phase out or quit using. I'm not saying that you cannot be offensive and we should apply some amount of effort to not offend people. We did a whole program on this, Andrea and Ron and I. So like on the list, we can talk about this in a minute, not using the word Jude or she-male or tranny. Those all make sense to me. That makes sense to me because they're meant to be offensive. The offense is built into them. But when you get into words like blackballed, whitewash, things like that, I'm like, I'm like, all of my black friends have much stronger backbones than this kind. Like, they wouldn't just wilt. Like, can I give you guys another? Here's another example.
Bring it.
Try to figure out why is this no longer acceptable within the Harvard IT department. Hip, hip. Hooray!
No,
stop. Why is hip, hip, hooray a phrase we all use all the time?
Yeah, seriously.
Why is hip, hip, hooray inappropriate?
Is it because it's so lame to say it? Is that the reason?
hip, hip. No,
Kaplan, I must point out a point of order here. You use the word lame, which is also inappropriate according to the Stanford Harmful Language Initiative.
That one I actually knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it for people who don't have hips? It is not because it's uncool. It's because of hips, like body parts. Okay, Andrea, what's your theory on
hip replacement surgery?
My guess is it was something we stole from. I'm just gonna keep sounding racist. I think we stole it from Chinese people.
Okay,
when we jammed them into Chinatowns, and then we started using it in parades.
So okay, we've got like kind of an ableist body part perspective coming from Kaplan, and we've got cultural appropriation coming from Andrea. The correct answer is a variation of hip, hip, hooray was used by Germans as a rallying cry during the Holocaust, although the phrase did not originate there and originated prior to the Holocaust. So
I mean,
to be clear on this,
they used cars during the Holocaust too.
Hip, hip, hooray predates the Holocaust. A variation of it, not hip, hip, hooray, but something similar was used by Germans during the Holocaust. Like, therefore, this should be stricken. Which, like, Kaplan, you're Jewish. Had you ever heard this?
This I've never
ever,
heard that.
Ever, like, had your rabbi ever mentioned that anybody that says this is an anti-Semite?
I believe they used to say that when the Jews were sent to the showers, everyone was chanting hip hip hooray. That was what we never learned.
It's
that
it's
ever.
A well established Holocaust.
Every time
well established fact
someone...
that there was like two lines and one said hip hip hooray. No, I you have one question though, was since you brought up the German, one word that's always I've always actually wondering why it's never been canceled, because my son took a chess class recently and I saw it was used in chess, was the word blitzkrieg. And now isn't that actually like shouldn't that be canceled? Isn't that the German, like it was the German warfare, like Hitler's German Blitzkrieg.
Putting on my Stanford hat, a phrase I am now going to use relentlessly. Putting on my Stanford hat, Blitzkrieg would be somewhat racially agnostic, since the Germans were bombing English people rather than specifically doing the Holocaust. However, it would be offensive. Because it is using violent language, which could be triggering. So, for example, one of the other things that's in this particular list is pull the trigger. You can't say pull the trigger because that's violent language, nor could you say bury the hatchet, although that would be because bury the hatchet is a cultural appropriative phrase that implies that – or no, it's not cultural appropriation.
It's
it
not
implies
violent, you're burying
Native
the hatchet.
Americans are – huh?
It's not violent, though. You're burying the hatchet. You're literally
right,
being
but
non-violent.
You're implying that Native Americans are a violent hatchet wielding people by using that phrase. So, those are there.
I was going to say, my favorite part of this, A, is that now I'm going to have bury the hatchet in my head in addition to circle the wagons. Those ones have really burned into my brain for some reason. So I'm going to be saying that forever now. But my other part of this, and Heaton, you kind of got to this when you said how they thought of this list, which is they thought who might be offended, how, and in the most abstract way. And it really does seem like no one, especially, you know, Cap not knowing hip, hip, hooray. They didn't ask the people who would be offended by these things. Like if they presented a survey and said, we've asked these particular marginalized groups what words they would love to hear people not say anymore, then I would maybe listen. But I don't see any of that happening.
As you, a Jew, funny, we just don't like to hear kike, and we don't like to hear we don't like to hear like Jew you over or any of that. But like we don't like anything Kanye West has said. We don't like to hear
things which are overtly and consciously offensive tend to be offensive, and understandably so.
I'm sure if you asked a homeless person if they were offended, they want to be, they would say their biggest priority is not being known as, what's the word they're supposed to be known as, unhoused. I'm sure they'd say, I'd actually just like some money or some food or a place to live. I don't care what you call me at the moment. But
there's also, Andrea alluded to this earlier, there's this bizarre attempt to never have anything be like short or a noun or anything like that. So you can't say senile. You can say person suffering from senility. Because if you say that guy is senile, you're implying that that is the totality of his human experience, whereas a person suffering from senility implies that it's a subset of his human experience.
It's the same with obesity. Supposed to say obesity anymore. You know, did you see that one?
Oh, yeah. There's several things like that.
What do I have
like
to say instead of that?
I didn't.
You probably can't say anything. You probably can't.
I didn't write that down. I do know that you can't say blind study in a scientific blind study. You should say masked study because it could be offensive to blind people.
That sounds like we're just like masked singer. You're like, and reveal the treatment.
We're defending anti-maskers. No.
You can't say basket case because that would offend people that are suffering from any type of anxiety. You have to say nervous. You can't say crazy or insane because that stigmatizes mental health. So instead of saying that's crazy, you would say that is surprising or that is wild. Wild is still okay for now.
I've actually heard.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, imagine if you just went through like a great piece of literature or something and just changed all these words. Like how a sentence changes if you say insane to surprising.
Right. It like actually does. You know, it's like catch 22 going through and deleting all the the adjectives. I had started saying wild because I was aware of the crazy and insane language and I don't care. And I have all the mental illnesses. So please say crazy. It doesn't bother me in the slightest, just for the record, to speak on behalf of that entire group. But when I was teaching, I have to be very careful about language because as you can see, people are getting fired all the time. So that's where I'm like most mindful of it. But also when I do consulting with companies and I tend to do people analytics work and DEI. So I have to sort of modify my language. And so I actually dropped crazy and insane a few years ago. I'm ahead of the curve. Thank you so much. And I started saying wild instead. And I actually am hearing murmurs the IT department at Stanford needs to step it up. I have heard that wild is actually not amazing either. Or maybe I'm just projecting and I'm paranoid now because it's talking about, you know, the idea that something that's like uncivilized might be bad or some like wild animal is somehow worse than the human society that we live in. And so I won't do it, but there's another key word that I don't know if it's on the list, but I notice among my left-leaning friends where they will say that is bananas. And if someone around you says that is bananas, that means they are so far to the left, you probably need to brace yourself for more. So that's like, I was going to say that's a trigger word.
Tip-off?
A tip-off is if you hear bananas. I cannot bring myself to say it. I will not say it, but that's the word.
I think part of the phenomena that's going on here is that there is an attempt to the attempt is to eliminate intention by eliminating word choice, and they're separate things. They don't work. So there's a good bit by Doug Stanhope. I'm not going to make it funny, but I'm going to take the logical bits of it. Doug Stanhope talks about the word retarded. We're not supposed to say the word retarded anymore, but retarded was never originally an offensive word. When the term retarded was originated by doctors, it was done so as a kindness to people with Down syndrome. Because previously, if you go back to like 1850 or whenever the word came into medical jargon, they were literally called imbeciles. If you had Down syndrome, people called you an imbecile. And so some doctors rightly went, you know, what if instead of like stigmatizing these people, we said that they're slower? We're going to borrow this musical term of retard or retardo, and we're going to say they're retarded. They're just slower, right? But the problem is people then make fun of other people by using that words. So Kaplan does, theoretically, Kaplan does something ridiculous, or I do something ridiculous, and Andrea calls us retarded.
Yeah, as I do.
Yeah. As you
I'm texting you constantly.
It's your catchphrase. It's absolutely.
It's my catchphrase.
The Andrea Jones Roy action figure has a little string you pull and it says retarded. So the problem is, like,
if anyone retarded. Wants to make that, I will buy several. Okay,
I will absolutely buy such a thing. But the problem with the system is that whenever you ban that word, people are still going to, they're just going to apply whatever you call. Yeah. So if we now change it, you don't say retarded, you say Down. Well, now you're going to say, man, you have Down syndrome or something like that. Regardless of whether this is offensive or not, trying to mitigate the intent by changing the word choice just isn't going to work. And so a lot of what's happening here is people going, I don't ever want you to make fun of me for wacky behavior. Therefore, you can't say crazy. You have to say wild. Okay. 5 minutes later, I'm going to go, wow, you're wild. And they're going to go, well, that makes me feel bad too. You can't say wild anymore either. And it's like, right, what you're trying to say is I'm not allowed to criticize you, rightly or wrongly. But there's no end to this. People are going to find ways to criticize you.
Yeah, we're playing whack-a-mole with words when you're right. The underlying issue of treating people with various developmental challenges, I don't even know what words to use anymore, or various identity backgrounds or whatever, is we should treat everyone the same, but we don't know how to change that. And so we just keep sliding around, you know, with the words and coming up with new ones.
So what words should we use when our friend's being retarded? What do we call it? What do we need to come up with, like, a good word that's safe, that won't get canceled.
I have a lot of people in my life
who still say it. I don't say it regularly, but I know a lot of people who say it, and I'm always like, I've worked in a world where, like, people are more PC, so I've, like, trained myself. But people who live in Queens, they still say it. Like, for instance, in New York.
One of my dear friends. I mean, you could just say being an idiot, right? But here's where I don't tend to say it. One of my dear friends, her brother has Down syndrome, and she once told me, you know, I get offended when people say that. And I went, okay, I don't want to hurt my friend's feelings. So I don't tend to say that word myself. However, I have noticed that all of my friend groups, the common denominator is none of them freak the fuck out if someone says the word retarded. Like if you were to ask them what are their politics, it's actually quite different. But it's like, do they flip out if they hear that word? And the answer is no. So yeah. I do think it's actually kind of useful as like flip the lights on and off to see if people get scared.
Right.
And then if they don't, you go, okay, all right. I just wanted to see where everybody was.
You're in the safe zone. So first test the waters. If they say bananas, you know you can't even touch it. And then you say, well, we might have a lot in common. And then drop the R word in a group text and see how it goes. Now I'm backing off it. But I'm not offended when you say it. I do not normally say it. But maybe
right. And as noted both in this and our prior program on this, there are words that are offensive that you just shouldn't say in polite society. There are very good reasons you should not be.
Some of them have historical reasons,
like the N word. Like, I'm going to say there are contexts where you could.
I mean, we used to say that, you know, growing up in Pennsylvania.
And I'll say there are contexts where you could say it if you're using it clinically. You're in you're in effect in a courtroom, even if you're in personal conversation. He said this and you're quoting him directly. I don't think words are magic. They don't have magical properties. They're not profane or sacred. They're just sounds you use to communicate information. Intent and context are very important. That said, there are words that are offensive. You need to be careful with them. But this is so, so over the top that it also negates whatever they were trying to do, because it immediately makes me want to say the word retarded after having read this thing. I'm like, I don't know about all these words. I do know I don't want to go to any of your birthday parties. You seem like the worst people in the world. You're not fun to hang out with. I don't want to hang out with you. Whatever team you're on, I don't want to be on that team. So yes. I don't care.
I don't think I've said the word retarded out loud for decades until this podcast. And now I've said it 25 times, and I'm already imagining getting canceled for my, like, halfway jokes about starting to say it more. But I totally agree. It's the piece about this list that makes me most frustrated. I think I'm, like, more angry than giddy, because I'm like sort of on this team to an extent, is that there are some words in there that I don't think we should say retarded, right? Sure. Even though my action figure will say it. Sure. But the fact that they've packed it with 99 other words that I think are complete nonsense is undermining the entire exercise. And it's turning it into a, we have to ban all words or we have to ban no words.
Well,
and that actually throws my whole model of the world into chaos, because I have always thought, like, okay, I'm left of center. I have friends of mine who are left of me. On average, they drive me nuts, crazy, insane, right? Bananas. They drive me out of my mind. But I appreciate that they're there because I think they do tend to nudge all of us generally in the right direction, though most of their recommendations don't catch on, but we do eventually get rid of the N-word and F-word and R-word or whatever word that I'm refusing to say. This list challenges that entire thing because I think they've pushed so far to the left that it just cuts off the conversation from anything sensible, and we actually are probably going to go backwards.
I'm going backwards.
They also, I'm saying retard left and right.
Do you know this list says you shouldn't say the word abort, which is that's right. That sounds right wing. You're against because it's
you can't say abort. There's other ones that just rule of thumb, and so rule of thumb you can't say. I literally am going to quote this directly. Okay. Although no written record exists today, the phrase is attributed to a law that allowed men to beat their wives with sticks no wider than their thumb. Now, there's no evidence for this. There's no actual historical evidence for this. It's from the movie Boondock Saints, where a lady got mad at a guy for saying rule of thumb, and that is the explanation that she posits. It's not actually rooted in history. So what you're saying is someone that watched Boondock Saints might have an inaccurate historical understanding of the origins of that phrase and subsequently be offended by it. To your point, Andrea, I'm with you completely. Whatever the goal is here, it's counterproductive. And the way I'm approaching this is I'm very much a systemic thinker. I think in terms of systems, and I think in terms of rules, and rules need to be universally applied. The system that they're coming up with is don't ever say anything which could theoretically be offensive, even if it's ridiculously stupidly bullshit underlying reasons, right? That's a very bad system. Like here's an example of a word that I don't use that is used very commonly that probably a lot of the folks that listen to our shows use. I don't use the word Karen. The reason I don't use the word Karen is I don't make fun of people for things they have no control over. So if you were a white woman, you can't control that. Or if you're an older white woman, you have no control over those two things. I'm never going to make fun of you for something that you can't control. I might if it's, again, if we're in our
That's
own
the
friend
best
group
laughed
and we're
at
making
any
fun of
show.
Each other.
It's a Karen joke.
But, you know, but that's, I at least I have a system there, right? Like I'm
the
saying
set of
like,
rules.
Yeah, there's a set of rules governing my language as opposed to me just going, literally anyone in the world has veto power over every single word in the world that I use, and I'm also going to enforce that on everybody else. Right. That's crazy.
And it's not even real veto power. It's imagined veto power. It's not that someone came to me and said, you can't use rule of thumb. It's that I saw it in a movie and thought other people who saw it in a movie might also think it's offensive. It's like, we're not even talking to real people. We're talking to imagined people about all of this. I almost want to not to, because I was thinking about this ahead of our roundtable. I was like, I don't know how to not end up in the slippery slope fallacy with this, but I kind of want to see if we can come up with our own words that we should ban and add to the list. So for example, I would like to ban the word gaslighting. I think it's overused, but I also
I don't
think
understand
it
what it means still.
Right. It also might be offensive to anyone who has died from a gas fire. So, bye.
Right.
See ya.
Yes.
It's out.
Which is actually pertinent to the current news cycle because last week
there was
a report that came out that gas stoves might cause asthma. Incidentally, I looked into this. The report was literally sponsored by a green energy group trying to retrofit American houses with just renewable electricity and China. The document, the science behind it was abysmal. It was not
sure the
in any way
correct.
I think AOC quoted that, so I thought it was fact. But
well, it might well have because then it turned, because then the Republicans freaked out, and then it became a culture war issue.
It became the funniest culture war issue, I think, in years. I feel like this was just comical on both sides.
But
I will say.
But theoretically, someone could be offended by that.
I will say that I am, I can't stop talking about how left-leaning I am, but I will admit my sheepleness because I actually used my stove, and I have a gas stove, it's right here, the other day. I made
video,
some kind of terrible stir. It was horrible. Anyway, because of all this uproar, and I realize it's all very stupid, I was like, I'll turn on the vents and open the window because the gas is dangerous, even though I've been cooking for 40 years. Anyway, well, not 40, but it got to me. That's
you
the
can't make
part.
Good eggs in an electric skillet. I'll say that. So I gas all the way.
It's funny that you mentioned banning words. I did a cursory amount of research on here because I think a relevant question that we can ask ourselves is with Stanford's forbidden word list of offensive profane language. Is this a comedic fluke or is this emblematic? I am increasingly of the opinion that this is emblematic of a vocal but powerful minority within the overall university system. So it's not just that we're picking an anecdote, it's that we're picking an example of something that's a wider phenomenon. I'm increasingly of that mindset. That said, I did a cursory amount of research for this just to see if this is proliferating elsewhere. The answer is yes. USC, a different university in California, is had something, and I don't know if this was their IT department or whether it was some other department, but they don't use the word field anymore. Because field? Yes. Actually, I think, Kaplan, didn't you find this? Wasn't this yours?
I did. I think because it's offensive to both to basically African Americans or to immigrants. It said because people who had to work the fields.
Anybody who's worked a field, therefore saying yeah. My field is comedy or my field is political science would be offensive, right? So it is happening elsewhere. Right. But to the gaslighting example, it's the Lake Superior State College in Michigan or something like that. They have what it first struck me as Orwellian craziness because they literally have a banned list of 100 words every year. But then I looked into it and because I wanted to do my due diligence, and it was like a comedic words that are banished hereby by our body because they are stupid words or they're useless or they're overused. And one of them was gaslighting for that exact reason. They were like, this is overused now. So it's more like kind of the opposite of Webster's word of the year of like, these are overwrought words that we are making fun of. And I was like, well, that's fine. That makes sense. Yeah. So we'll go ahead and tie a bow on this one and then move on to wailing on George Santos. The University of Stanford was quick when this came out in December to applaud the intentions behind the list, but at the same time to note that it was only the IT department. It didn't speak for Stanford as a whole. And after people like us have wailed on it for several weeks now, Stanford has yanked it entirely from the website. And so
we won.
I don't know if you want to call this a victory. Yeah, I guess it's – yeah.
We did it. We're saving America.
The phenomenon goes on, but the battle point this time has lent towards sanity, which I assume would have been a forbidden word.
So your kids at Stanford are free to say hip, hip, hooray again. Is that what you're saying?
I just feel like we haven't talked about this yet, but the fact that they released it as a PDF was a dark move. It's like, at least just leave it on a website so you can't download it and you're stuck with screenshots or something. The PDF, and it's such an old-timey format, I just feel like the whole thing. I've been wondering if NYU has sent around anything. We do get guidance around how to be more inclusive and things like that, but I don't think we've ever gotten a list of words, but I might go looking.
They probably tell you not to go on podcasts like this, but...
Yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and finish that story for two reasons. I think we could do this for another hour, but we really should move on. We're going to move on to the topic of George Santos. Fantastically, Turner Sparks joins us at this exact moment as we transition to a different story. Hello, Turner. How are you?
Look at that. What's up, everybody? I'm here for story two. You don't need my opinion on Stanford. I think you all know what it is.
So. You're in favor of all the words they want to get rid of.
I do want to say that I was telling my dad about this story a couple weeks ago. I grew up in Northern California, and I was telling my dad about it, and he was like, this is ridiculous. He's like, I have a friend on the board at Stanford. I'm going to let him know this is the stupidest idea ever. So I think Gary Sparks is the one who got this
Gary
taken
Sparks
down.
Saved the day.
Good, thanks,
good.
Gary.
Gary Sparks, I'm with you. Because I read this and was like, oh, you should defund whatever department came up with this. Just immediately cut everyone's salary that was involved in this. They have too much free time and too much resources. That said, we will move on. We're going to talk about George Santos. Turner, can I kick this to you? For anybody somehow unfamiliar with George Santos, can you let them know who this fellow is?
Well, he is proudly representing the 3rd District of New York and in Congress. And
the fighting
he was
third.
Legitimately elected. The voters spoke. The voters, this is America still. The voters get to decide what they want. No, George Santos. I was just quoting Kevin McCarthy there.
The illustrious Speaker of the House.
The Speaker of the House, barely, who desperately needs George Santos's vote, so he's the only one still supporting him. But yeah, I'll explain. George Santos, if you do not know, is a, I believe, Brazilian-born man who lives, maybe heritage is Brazilian, and he lives in New York, in Queens, I believe.
And Long Island,
and he represents
Long
a district Island, in Nassau New York County. In Congress. He's been lying. Did you guys lose me?
No, I can hear you. I think Kaplan's a little bit intermittent, but I can hear you.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Should I take that line again for editing purposes?
Yes, please. Yeah, and I'll make a note.
Okay. No, but he was just elected to Congress representing the 3rd District of New York, and he's a liar. He's lied about his college degree. It's come out all after the election that he has lied about where he went to college. I believe where he went to high school. He said he played on the volleyball team in college. He also, I think, and a million other things. He stole a scarf from his roommate that he wore when he spoke at the Stop the Steal rally for Trump in 2020, which is, I think, my favorite one.
He was wearing a stolen scarf at a Stop the Steal rally.
Yeah, he stolen Burberry scarf. And he also, I jokingly said to you all off air that I'm surprised his name is George Santos. I'm surprised he doesn't go by Jorge Santos or something to play up the Latino, to get the Latino vote. And if you're lying about everything else, it turns out his name, we now found out, is not. 2 years ago, he went by, or 2019, he went by a completely different name. I was trying to look it up, but I didn't have time. But someone can Google it quickly. He's on record speaking at public events with a completely different name. And his roommate was just on CNN last night saying that I've never known him as George Santos. I've always known him by this other name. Have you? I don't know if you
I'm
guys
looking for
okay, wait. So this is just the headline I'm looking at. He has called himself Anthony DeVolder and George DeVolder, and then George Anthony DeVolder Santos. Some of the other greatest hits in this man's brief but meteoric career. He spoke at a national Holocaust summit as the descendant of a Holocaust survivor.
Holocaust survivor.
Not Jewish.
Didn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah, not Jewish. And they would confront it on it. And he was like, well, there's someone back in my family, if you go back far enough, who's Jewish. So I'm Jewish.
Right.
He also said his mom black. Died in 9/11, which is and then not later, true at all. She died
that
years
she died
later.
Like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he said he was black.
And then he got elected as a gay man. He is married. He's married to a man, and he's an Instagram and stuff. However, he was also married to a woman just before he ran for Congress. It's that does happen, you know, where somebody realizes their sexuality or is not okay with it. But it also fits this pattern of him being something of a fabulist.
He claimed a lot of things related to Goldman Sachs and that he drove like a decent percentage of how much money they made. And eventually,
like $100 million while working at Goldman Sachs.
$600 million, he said.
Came out and was like, he never worked here. Like, we don't know what's going on.
Yes. He had worked for a company that had done contract work for Goldman Sachs as like a phone rep or something. Like, it was very, very attenuated connection. And he claimed
for a company that was a contractor to Goldman Sachs. I was a corporate role player. I used to go, thank you so much. I'm running for Congress. I used to go into Goldman Sachs right here in New York City and a couple of the locations around the world. And I would show up and we'd do this thing where we would act out difficult conversations with your manager. And you had to like demonstrate how to do it well and how to do it poorly. I did it with Turner, with like Joe Schaefer and some other people. It's sort of like improv corporate role play stuff. Anyway,
so Joe Schaefer worked at Goldman Sachs as well.
Exactly. Right. It's like I spent a lot of time in there. I drank a lot of their coffee. I still would not say that I generated income revenue for Goldman Sachs.
Right. As he did.
Right.
He claimed that he had employees who died in the Pulse nightclub shooting. That was not true.
Pretty much, he's like Zelig. He's involved in everything that's happened in like world history, unless
like a Forrest Gump. Like,
Gump. Yeah. I mean, he's a gay black Jewish Holocaust surviving, 9/11 surviving, Pulse nightclub shooting. I mean, he's got it all. He's
No, so let's get to the real issue at the heart of this. There's many, but one of them I believe is that. So then, as I kind of jokingly said at the beginning, McCarthy is only it just won by a slim majority in Congress. That he's the Speaker of the House
after 15 votes, which hasn't happened since 1876 or whatever it was.
Yeah, the Republican, and so he needs this guy's Santos is a Republican. He needs Santos's vote. If so, in any other situation, I think everyone would agree that this guy needs to leave Congress. He's done. He got elected on a lot of lies.
Even beyond standard politician level lies, because we almost have to just assume.
Weird details.
But like. This is where I get tripped up a little bit, because politicians do lie. Trump was a lie a minute. Biden, who's more in the spotlight at the moment, claimed that he offered his uncle a Purple Heart on his deathbed and he turned it down, even though Biden wasn't in a position to give a Purple Heart until 5 years after his uncle died. Like things like that. Hillary Clinton claimed she was named after Sir Edmund Hillary, who climbed Mount Everest, but he did it 2 years after she was born. So there's a lot – like politicians do that kind of crap all the time, right? I think the difference between George Santos is that he is a serial liar who is utterly – like it's not fudging the edges a little bit. It's just across the board level lies all the time.
And his district was like 20% Jewish. So when he goes and lies and says he's Jewish and from Holocaust survivors and speaks at the Republican Jewish convention and all this stuff he did, that made a difference in the election, probably, you know.
Yes.
That brings in votes.
One would think I'm surprised that this is not something that the candidate who ran against him was better at vocalizing.
That was a bad job.
One would think that, because they said, like, we knew the guy was a fraud. We told everybody. And it's like, you should have listed the specific things he was fraudulent about, because they're myriad.
Yeah. The heart of this issue is it seems like McCarthy's going to support him to stay in office for 2 years. McCarthy did say, I saw him in an interview. He said, the voters spoke. Those are his constituents. Listen, this is America. He gets his 2 years, and then if they don't want him in 2 years, then they can get him out. But all McCarthy's trying – that's all self-preservation. McCarthy doesn't care about America. He just cares about preserving himself. So
he is a slinky with a good hairdo. That is my assessment of McCarthy, a slinky with a hairdo.
The heart of this issue is I can guarantee you 2 years from now, there will be 100 Santoses running. Mm-hmm. If you can get away with this and win, congratulations. This is the future of American politics. This is what everyone's going to be doing.
So I've got a couple of other mechanisms we can mention here. Is the House does have procedures in place where it can refuse to seat a member. So this is just the House of Representatives can get together and go, this person is so out with our morality, even for us political scumbags, that we're not going to let him in. It's not been done. I think it's been done like once in American history where like somebody like shot a puppy on the lawn of the White House. I don't remember what it was, but it's very, very, very rare. Theoretically, this could happen. If there had been a massive Republican victory of like 3-1, I think you would see that happen. I think that Turner's absolutely spot on. If McCarthy had not been relying on this vote, he would be throwing him under the bus. I'm not entirely sure about this, but I would think that there would be a local mechanism in place where the congressional district itself could do like a recall election or if not, there ought to be a recall election for this. I don't think he's going to make 2 years for this reason. Not because Congress is going to decide to have any measure of quality control. I have no faith in Congress to do that at all. The reason that I think he's going to get kicked out is I think I highly suspect he's a criminal. Let me tell you my reasoning on this. The math does not add up with this man at all. When you start reading his disclosures, he'll say despite the fact he's a Wall Street executive making $600 million for Wall Street, he's only I George Santos only earned $55,000 last year, and I am living on my sister's futon. He, by the way, he had a lien against him because he just didn't pay rent for a year. He told them he forgot. He didn't pay rent because he forgot. The money was tight and his mom was dying from cancer. I'm sure she was dying from cancer, by the way. And he forgot. Which,
for the third
time. Don't really want anybody in Congress that forgets to pay rent. But the criminal element that I see is this. If your campaign lists expenses less than $200, you don't have to itemize them and include receipts. So if your campaign goes to Home Depot and buys $300 worth of supplies to build, posters and things, you've got to mention all those things. You've got to turn that in. Less than $200, you don't have to do it. So many of his campaign expenses are $199. Mm. For example, I checked this out last night because it's publicly disclosed information. You can go into this disclosure and then just put in everything that's $199. There's 40 pages of statements of $199. It also begs the question of where the hell is this man getting all the money? If he's too poor to pay rent and he's living on his sister's couch and all of a sudden he has this giant infusion of cash to run a successful Republican campaign against this guy. It smells to me like some money laundering happened here, and a lot. And I think it's only a matter of time before. Yes, he's a con artist. So I don't think he's going to survive 2 years.
Did you see what committees he got?
Oh, God. I just want to say, I did just look it up. He cannot be recalled in the United States of America.
Oh, he can't?
Apparently, that's a nationwide law.
Okay.
Which is great.
Okay, good. Thank you. So I kind of get, because congressional terms are only two years, right? So in effect, we all get a recall election every 2 years. I kind of get that. But he could be removed through criminal proceedings, which I think is very, very, very likely to happen. I do not think
if he goes to jail, he gets recalled, right? I mean, he by natural. Did you see which committees he's on, by the way?
No, what is he running on?
Okay, sitting on two committees in the House: the House Small Business Committee and the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. So he's in charge of small businesses.
Well, he is an astronaut, so that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Kaplan, and he's not only in charge of small businesses; he's in charge of the PPP loan.
That's the key. Kind of the program,
massive nationwide fraud scandal. When the pandemic happened, small businesses could apply for these loans to help them get through. I remember the Los Angeles Lakers famously got $43 million. This is supposed to be for small businesses. The idea was mom and pop shops, you know. I remember
I'm sure someone at the Lakers Shake is Shack a mother and a father.
Shake Shack got, I don't know exactly how much, like $100 million or something. And anyway, now the government's trying to go back and get this money back from these bigger businesses
who would be better
on the board trying to go get the money. So the biggest,
it's like in Catch Me If You Can, when you got the guy, the great con artist, Leonardo DiCaprio, to work for the feds. He knows when he sees a shady check, he's a master. So this is,
so George Santos is the Frank Abagnale of Congress. Yeah, ideally.
Exactly. Exactly.
Assuming that he's not just simply bought off by all of these interests, that would be. I think that's the best case scenario for the American taxpayer. Is if George Santos.
Can I put? I just want to. If there's a way to gamble on this now, that actually sounds like a winning political campaign in the United States of America for him. In 2 years, he will say, "Yes, I did all these things. I'm the biggest con artist. Who better to catch a con artist than a con artist? Boom, he'll win.
I love
it's
this.
Like, president, so you know that.
George Santos, a criminal you can trust. Yes. I hate that phrase there. Yes. Vote George, he's a criminal, but he's our criminal.
It's some Better Call Saul logic, just about. It's an even bigger version or more identity consuming version of Trump's, you know, yeah, I didn't pay taxes because I'm smart sort of thing. But it's like his whole identity. He was doing it. No, it's amazing. I've been trying to think about this whole thing in the context of how we catch students cheating in my class. And this is where it gets tricky, where I say to my students, you know, I have a lot of things in place to catch cheating. I don't catch it all. If you can do something where you can outsmart me and cheat on the exams and the assignments and do great and I don't catch you, good for you. I'm impressed, right? And Santos getting as far as he did and getting elected kind of feels to me like he got through the semester and I didn't catch him cheating. He got an A in the class. And it's like, okay, that's it.
Kevin McCarthy.
And this is something that I have never come across in my class is that, you know, maybe that summer it comes out that there was some cheating going on. I don't think I've never had this happen. I don't think I could go back and say, actually, you fail. I think all I can do is put in place new mechanisms to catch that new kind of cheating. Because if the grade is registered, it gets over, I think. I don't know for sure. And that feels like kind of what Turner said at the beginning where, you know, I hope Heaton, you're right, that he goes to jail and that's sort of the way that we correct on him, or he becomes the nation's leading con artist and saves us all from ourselves. But I think Turner's right that unless we do something, there's going to be 100 more of these people next time, because until I do something to catch my students who are cheating, who I know are cheating, they're just going to keep doing it unless I enact something. So I think we have to do, is there a law in Congress that says you can't lie? There can't be, or there wouldn't be anyone in Congress.
That would,
that like would we literally
have like three members of Congress at that point. Yeah.
I think
that's
I
like having
with the
a law on a swim team that you can't swim.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
It just, unless you're transgender,
like,
but okay.
There's only one Trump. This guy's a unique. He's a unique con artist. I don't think you can duplicate exactly what he did, because this is like so many lies. I mean, this is like
Kaplan.
And the
I disagree. We all know someone like this. Every American person has come across a person at some point in their life who, my mom, she's like, George Santos, that reminds me of a guy I used to work with.
Yeah.
Literally everyone knows someone like this. And
I
now
do
all
too.
Those people are going to be empowered.
Should we all go say the names of the people we know in our own lives who are doing
sure
this?
That.
That's for Patreon listeners.
I know me.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to lie to girls about all sorts of things, but this is pre-internet. Like, they couldn't just look it up. I'd say I'm an Academy Award-winning screenwriter, but that was before Google. I didn't know you could still lie and get away with it.
Well, so, and it doesn't count if you're at a bar, Kaplan.
Exactly.
I think what we should do with George Santos is put him in charge of talking to any country we owe money to. So like whenever the national debt comes up, I think like America owns like 90% of the national debt, right? But like the remaining 10%, China's the biggest player. George Santos should be the guy that tells them the check is in the mail. He should be the guy that like we send to Beijing and he's like, no, I get why you think that. No. We used a WeTransfer. There's just some technical issues going on. Actually, WeTransfer is going to have lower transmission rates, so you're going to get more money, but it's going to come after I fly back to America.
The best part about that lie is I hope he does it, and I think WeTransfer is for sharing files, and so it's like there's literally no way.
He won't know that, though.
PDFs of checks, yeah.
Yeah.
I like this. Should we all go around and say what would be the best use of George Santos in the U.S.
Yeah,
government?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I've already gone. So yeah, Truder, please go ahead.
I think it would be, well, we know we haven't brought this up yet, but he's wanted in Brazil.
Right.
What?
For stealing a checkbook and writing hot checks.
Yeah, because he's the guy from Cash If You Can.
Yeah, and so he was wanted they were looking for him a decade ago. But a decade ago, they couldn't find him, so they closed the case. They literally closed the case in Brazil. And then a month ago, whenever he got elected and he popped back up into international spotlight, Brazil went, oh, that's the guy we were looking for a decade ago. They reopened the cold case.
Hot damn, that guy ran for Congress? That's our guy. Look, Jerry, look, that's our guy.
It would be like my plan, what I think is, you know how we did the prisoner swap with Brittany Griner or whatever? We do this with them. We give them Santos, but they give us their best soccer player.
Oh, they didn't say they give us Bolsonaro.
Deal. Because we need to start winning some World Cups.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Boat Turner sparks 2024.
We get Neymar.
We'll be right back.
There'll be a huge ride in Brazil if we make that trade.
All right, my use for him is I think he should be a role model for young people in that he has a kind of ego and self-confidence that has gotten him incredibly far in life. And to have the kind of like, I've had made up names. I'm wanted for a crime in Brazil. I'm going to make up my whole resume. The internet exists and I'm going to run for Congress and win. That kind of attitude could really turn some lives around among smart, thoughtful, maybe more shy or less confident young people around the world. I'm constantly telling my non-cheating good students, at least I don't think they're cheating, that they should believe in themselves and they have more skills than they realize. And if they're applying for a job that says 3 years of Python and they only have 1 year of Python, they can figure it out. And I literally tell them to lie. Santos should go around to high schools, especially where people are feeling rather, you know, downtrodden and not excited about their futures and say, look, you can say whatever. And if they take 1% of that, I think we'll have some really great talent rise to the top.
That's great. Okay, so we've
he gets a whistle too.
Turner's prisoner swap for a soccer player.
Yeah.
And Andrea wants a motivational speaker in lower performing schools
for troubled youths.
These are both great. These are both great. Kaplan, what do you got?
Well, my original one was the idea of just, you know, he could catch the guy. He could catch the con artist because that's his thing. But to piggyback on what Andrea said a little bit, I think he can also give. Like the importance of having a well-rounded education, because you have to know about things to lie about them, right? So you have to our Holocaust education has not been good lately. a lot of people don't know anything about the Holocaust. He took the time to learn enough about it that he could lie about it. So that can be very motivating. If we need to find to get ways, because it's happened a long time ago now, to get kids to be more interested in the Holocaust, so they can say, oh, I could use this one day. I could use this for a job. I could use this to sympathy. I could use this to fit in a 20% Jewish district. So that maybe he can be the guy who introduces Schindler's List when they re-release it or something. Like, he can just. So
Kaplan, you're saying that in the end, he actually is a good Jew?
Yeah, in the end, he's a better Jew than a lot of Jews I know at this point. He's a pro-Israel. You know, there was a tip-off when we should have known he wasn't Jewish when he was giving his speech, and Bibi Netanyahu had just been reelected. And in the speech, he said, I'm so happy that David Netanyahu is back in power. And, like, Jew,
really?
Nobody caught it until later they played the clip. Like, he's one of the more well-known world leaders, especially if you're Jewish. And he just called, hey, my guy David.
Yeah, David Netanyahu. That, if somebody said David Netanyahu, I'd be like, is that like the younger brother that runs a beer company in Haifa? Yeah. Or maybe like his nephew or something, David Netanyahu?
Yeah.
Great. Well, I think we've certainly come up. I'm gonna go ahead and pull out of this one and give it to Turner. I would love to get a good soccer player and send him to Brazil. I think that's a really good one. However,
we need it. That'd be great.
However,
for us.
Yeah. I endorse either of your plans if for some reason we're not able to get an extradition treaty going with Brazil. I think we've covered not only George Santos, but literally all relevant news in the United States over the last 3 months. So I think we could wrap up now. Does that sound good, gang?
Recap.
I think,
yeah, this is fun.
I think we've done it.
Wonderful. Great. Well, before we do that, why doesn't everybody go around and mention their show and anything they've got coming up? Andrea, you want to kick that off?
Yeah. So my show is Majoring in Everything. We are making our way through the second season. And I have an episode with Chris Duffy out, who is a comedian and host of a TED podcast and a former science teacher. And it's all about people who do multiple interesting, unrelated things. And coming up next, we have an episode from one of the first ever YouTubers who was like famous on YouTube in 2006 and talk about how she makes a living doing that.
2006.
Nice. And Turner Kaplan.
Yes. So our show is Lost in America. This week we are talking about the storming of the Capitol in Brazil with Brazilian comedian Victor Cameja. And we are excited about that. But most importantly, I don't know, did Cap mention our show earlier?
I mentioned the show in the beginning, but, you know.
Okay, great.
Good,
last
good
thing,
Patreon
yes,
plug, but mention it again because people will have forgotten by now, given the brilliance of our rhetoric.
Right now, everybody, right when this episode ends, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. For $5 a month, you get Kaplan and I, an extra podcast Kaplan and I do. But right now, you also get to watch our pilot episode of the TV show we created that we're pitching soon to networks and film festivals and all kinds of stuff. So that we will be airing. We'll be doing a live watch party February 16th and another one March 2nd with me, with Kaplan, and with some of the people you watched on the show from El Salvador, the director, that kind of stuff. And then we'll do a talk afterwards. So patreon.com/lostinamerica. Get involved.
And I am Andrew Heaton, the host of The Political Orphanage, but I will direct listeners to another podcast that I have brought back. I also host a sci-fi podcast called Alienating the Audience. It was on hiatus for a few months. It has now come back and roaring. The first kickoff episode of this season is me and Brian Brushwood and a puppeteer formerly from Jen Henson Studios that now works for Michelle Obama, breathlessly discussing how much we enjoy Andor, and me breathlessly explaining why it's such a great example of public choice theory. Now, I realize not everybody was a virgin as long as I was, but for people that really enjoy policy and Star Wars, you'll enjoy that episode. And I believe this week the episode is me talking to my dear friend and former producer Josh Jennings about when science fiction implodes because it becomes too preachy. So if you've ever watched a film and thought, God, I just wish they'd make good characters a good plot, we really investigate that, and that is Alienating the Audience.
Well, I got to check that out.
Awesome.
I love Andor. So.
Jennings is great.
Thank you.
Love that.
Jennings is great. He's a good guy. Good fella. All right. Everybody, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. Bye, all.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah.
Get lost.